Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Harbor Group Investment Strategy Update for the month of April 2016. My name is Chris Newell. I'm one of the partners here at the Harbor Group, and I'm joined by my colleague, Robin Gullison, our lead strategist, to walk you through our current thoughts and outlook for the markets. To begin with, as a follow-up to the last call that we did in March of 2016, Robin developed a checklist of signposts that we would be looking for in order to become more constructive on the markets. At that point in time, stock markets were embraced with volatility to the downside, and the outlook from investors was anything but clear. Today, the outlook has improved substantially, and we thought it worthwhile to go back and look at those checklists that Robin put together. Robin, the first one that you identified was an improvement in the oil market. Could you give us an update on that outlook?
Yeah, certainly, Chris. If everybody thinks back to January and February, you had extreme downside volatility in the oil price. I believe the oil price hit about $26 for West Texas Intermediate twice, once in January, once in February. You've had a pretty substantial rally since then, with oil now trading closer to $40. So while it's difficult to say if the low is in for the oil price, it certainly seems like we're pretty close to that, and the tone towards oil and any other securities that are related to oil, things like the Canadian dollar, energy stocks, even the Canadian banks, have improved materially since then. So that one, we'd give it a check.
The second one that you highlighted was a better tone to the credit markets. Could you first, for those of us who don't understand what the terminology credit spread means, just define that? And then secondly, tell us why it matters and what's happened since identifying that as something that needed to be improved.
Sure. So a credit spread is simply the differential in yields for a corporate bond versus a government bond. So we think of it as the yield premium that investors require to take on the risk of a corporation versus the risk of a government. And the change in that spread, so as it becomes wider or it becomes relatively more expensive for corporates to borrow versus governments, that's typically a risk-off indicator. So an indicator that people are less willing to take risk. And it's kind of a bad omen in that as it becomes more expensive for companies to finance themselves, the profitability goes down and it's more difficult to raise financing. So it's a very important leading indicator we look for the direction of the equity market. Now, the credit spreads have been fairly positively correlated with the oil price, particularly in the high yield debt market, because a lot of the high yield debt market has been energy firms in the last few years. So it was encouraging for us to see that as the oil price went up, credit spreads came down, so it became relatively less expensive for companies to borrow. That's a positive sign for the outlook, and that's happened as well.
Thank you. The third telltale sign that you were looking for was an improvement in the economic data. What's happened there?
Well, it seems like every year for the last 5 years, you've had almost this rite of passage of a growth scare, they call it, in the U.S. economy in the first quarter. So meaning people see data that indicates the economy is slowing, and people worry about getting a recession. And there was recession fear was absolutely rampant in the U.S. in the first quarter. We didn't quite believe it ourselves because a lot of the things we watched closely to indicate recession were not pointing that way. For example, employment data continued to be strong, but things like manufacturing were a bit soft. But we're happy to report that those have turned around a lot. So we've seen the ISM Manufacturing Index, which is a broad indicator for U.S. manufacturing, has turned up in the last couple of months. Employment data has continued to be strong. We've actually seen core inflation ticking a bit higher. Now, typically we wouldn't be too excited about inflation going higher. When you have the world all worried about deflation and central banks doing very aggressive policies such as negative interest rates to try and combat deflation that maybe end up doing more harm than good, seeing a bit of inflation has actually been a welcome sign.
Robin, a month ago you indicated that the technical indicators would need to improve in order to become more positive. Could you first, for those people who don't understand what a technical indicator is, explain that, and secondly, let us know, has it improved?
Certainly. So technical indicators are people who watch the stock market based on, you know, changes in price, changes in volume, and what they call support and resistance levels. That meaning that if a security traded at a certain price, you know, if it traded there for a long period of time, that'll be either a support or a resistance level, and if it breaks through those levels, they can be significant. So, for example, on the S&P 500 in the U.S., the market sold off in the January. It bottomed at around 1820. You had a rally into January, early February. Then you had another steep sell-off, and the market held at 1820 again. So that would be called a double bottom in technical parlance, and typically that's a bullish sign. If you had not held that 1820 level, which was support in the eye of technical analysts, that would have indicated further downside. Thankfully, that held on, and the market's had quite a strong recovery since. So we think that's turned for the better.
Okay, so far, 4 out of 5 ticks. And the next one is clarity on the U.S. election. This was a big question mark a month ago, and any comment or update there?
I'd say you've got a bit more clarity there. You know, I don't think you'll know for certain until we get much later in the year, but back when we started talking about this, you had Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders leading in the polls, and sometimes by quite substantial margins. And our view was that if either one of these gentlemen ended up in the White House, you would have substantial economic uncertainty. It seems like the odds of that are fading fairly rapidly at this point. But, you know, we're not going to know more until you get closer to the election. For example, what happens at the Republican convention, it seems like that's going to be a very difficult weekend for them. So I think it's looking a little more positive because despite your political leanings, you know, if you get the status quo, Hillary Clinton wins the White House and the Republicans maintain both houses of Congress, it shouldn't change the economic outlook all that much.
So summarizing the checklist before we get into the meat of your presentation, are we in a bull market? Are we in a bear market? Was this just a correction? What's the outlook?
Our view is, has been and is, that this is a correction in a broader long-running bull market we've had in global equities. And it seems every few months to a year you get a so-called panic attack in the market, whether it's due to things like Greece or Cyprus or the U.S. Congress threatening to shut down the government, whatever it might be. China has been a popular one. But through the whole piece of this, we haven't seen any indicators that a recession is imminent. And that's what would really cause us to change our stance in a significant fashion. If you saw some sort of indicators that you were headed for a recession in the U.S., that's the surefire killer of a bull market, and that's what we continue to watch for, and so far the indicators don't point that way.
And Robin, moving into your presentation, and for those of you who are looking at the presentation online, we're now on page 3 of his slide deck. Can you talk to the short-term volatility, specifically in Canada, and compare and contrast that short-term volatility with longer-term results?
For sure. I think, you know, the way we look at it here is that living through volatility is kind of the cost of admission for earning the long-term equity market return. And what do we mean by volatility? Well, in Canada, it's been quite substantial. You know, the TSX on an index basis corrected by 24% from mid-2014 to early 2016. And if you were at the lows in the beginning of 2016, that was the level that the TSX first breached in 2006. So you had a 10-year lost decade, essentially, for the TSX. Now, thankfully, our portfolios in general look nothing like the TSX, because the TSX has an overly aggressive weighting in energy and materials, and that was a culprit of a lot of the price deterioration for the TSX. But nonetheless, for somebody who's a disinterested observer just, you know, looking at the paper or the news, it was pretty distressing to see the Canadian market done nothing for 10 years. Now, as troubling as that might be, if you look at the next slide, you can see the long-term returns are the reason you stay involved. Over the long term, you've had price-only returns in the 5% range, and the total return has actually averaged closer to 9%, 8.86 annualized since the 1950s with reinvested dividends. So to us, when you have a risk-free rate for 10-year Government of Canada bonds around 1.3%, cash paying around 0.75%, that's not going to get you inflation, especially after taxes. So in our view, the volatility in equities is worth the price for the longer-term returns, and it seems you're very unlikely to get anywhere else.
Robin, looking to page number 6 of your slide presentation, as you've already talked about the improving economic data flow out of the U.S., have we seen something similar in Canada?
We have. You know, if you go back to the beginning of the year when the Canadian dollar was extraordinarily weak and everybody thought the Bank of Canada was going to cut rates again and there was chatter about the Bank of Canada going to negative interest rates, you saw the economic data in Canada was quite weak, but surprisingly, it's come through for the better. So GDP data has been better. The employment data last week was very strong. And you know, some of these are probably due for some sort of downward revision because they were extraordinarily strong given the backdrop we've seen in Canada. But nonetheless, it's been a good sign. And just today, the Bank of Canada came out, kept interest rates on hold. Sounds like they're going to maintain that stance for quite a while. And they mentioned that the federal government stimulus is actually one of the reasons they're less reticent to more reticent to cut rates because they think that's going to add to growth in Canada.
Terrific. And scrolling forward to slide number 9, as Robin has covered off the other slides in his verbal dialogue, Robin, could you give us an indication of how markets globally are doing this year? You know, who's on top, who's on the bottom, and what are the prospects in Canada?
One of the themes we had at the beginning of the year was that the TSX had a decent chance of outperforming the S&P 500, and that's for a number of reasons. Number one, just simply it had underperformed for 4 years, which is quite unusual, and that, of course, is not something you base a thesis off of. But if you also look at what valuations were like towards Canada, you look at sentiment and the fact that, again, at the bottom, we were down 24% from the highs, where the U.S. is only down about 10-12% from the highs. You know, Canada was much further along in the correction process, and we knew we needed a little bit of good luck from the oil price, but we got that, and it turns out Canada is the best-performing developed market year-to-date. So while Canada is up around 4% year-to-date, the U.S. is flat, European markets are down, Japan is down. So you've actually seen a pretty significant outperformance in the Canadian market this year.
Robin, you keep talking about oil and a rebounding oil. You know, what's the best way for clients to play this? You know, not many can put up with the volatility and the violent up and down ride. Is there, you know, a better risk adjusted way to get exposure to that energy market?
We believe there is. The high yield debt market, we think, is a more interesting way to play the energy cycle, because with the energy stocks, you still want to obviously have some exposure there, but we don't think you want to go necessarily overweight, because you have a fairly symmetrical risk reward, meaning that if oil goes back down, these stocks can go back down very sharply, and if oil goes up, they can go up very sharply. If you play it in the debt markets, you have a lot better chance, a lot better upside potential than downside, we think, because these bonds have become deeply distressed for a lot of these oil companies, paying double-digit yields. You've got some downside protection, because if the company were to have the worst and file for bankruptcy, the equity's worth zero, but the bonds would likely be worth something. And because these bonds are often trading in the $60 to $70 range out of $100 par, you have the potential for substantial capital gain. So we think there are pockets of the high-yield market that are very attractive right now, and we have some managers we can employ to put in that strategy.
Before talking about some of the opportunities that we see in the market, Robin, perhaps you could talk about a couple of the risks that you see. You've so far given a pretty upbeat presentation. What are some of the risks that we see out there?
Well, one of the things we want to watch in the U.S. is productivity and inflation. So, you know, Canada, as we all know, has had a productivity problem for a long time. This is something that's fairly well covered in the press, not talked about quite as much in the U.S. And if you look back, I think it's on chart number 11, I've got a long-term trend of U.S. productivity. If you go back to the tech bubble in the late 90s, early 2000s, U.S. productivity was running 3-4%. And productivity is simply increase in output per worker. And you can see you had very strong increases in output per worker back then. Now it's somewhere closer to zero. So as your output per worker goes down, if you need to increase your output, you have to hire more people. And in the short term, that's really good for employment. That's good for wage growth. Very positive for, I'd say, the economy as a whole and for, you know, for workers' standard of living. Longer term, though, it's inflationary, because if you have to hire more people and the labor market gets tighter, you have to pay up for that employment, and that generally leads to inflation. So longer term, a decline in productivity is inflationary and increases the risk of recession, because if you get inflation without substantial growth, that's going to cause the central banks to raise interest rates, and that puts forth the risk of recession. So one of the things we're worried about is the potential for higher inflation. As I mentioned before, you've got inflation now in the U.S., core inflation running at a post-crisis high at 2.3%. The Fed seems content to let that go for now. I think they're much more worried about employment and worried about the strength of the U.S. dollar, and I think they're trying to actively weaken the dollar. So they're going to let inflation go for a little bit, but the risk is if inflation accelerates, they may be left with no choice.
One of last year's big winners in the marketplace for Canadian investors was the depreciating Canadian dollar vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar. And my goodness, it really seems as if that's reversed course this calendar year. Could you talk a little bit about our currency and the relationship to perhaps interest rates and oil?
Sure. The two big drivers of the currency have been oil and the interest rate differential. So the interest rate differential means the difference between Canadian and U.S. short-term interest rates. And it kind of flips back and forth as to what's the primary driver. For the last couple of years, they've all kind of run in tandem, because as oil sold off, Canadian interest rates have gone down while U.S. interest rates haven't changed. And it didn't matter so much that Canadian rates were higher than U.S. rates. It's more the rate of change, or the marginal change that matters. So as oil sold off, you saw Canadian interest rates come down, U.S. interest rates do nothing, and that was very detrimental to the Canadian dollar. Well, where we are now is that oil's come back, Canadian dollar's come back, our interest rates haven't changed, but the U.S.'s tone on interest rates has changed pretty substantially. The Fed ended last year saying they're planning to hike rates 4 times this year. The market didn't like that. You saw substantial U.S. dollar strength, as we saw at the very beginning of this year with the Canadian dollar going down to 68 cents. And you saw stock markets get quite concerned. Since then, the Fed has backed off, and they think maybe they'll raise rates two times this year, potentially less. The bond market has less than one rate hike priced in. So that's led to a weaker dollar, stronger Canadian dollar. And as we see it, you know, for now, with oil being so volatile, that's probably the main driver for the Canadian dollar. But over time, that might fade and go back to interest rates.
So while we're on the topic of investments perhaps not going the way that markets had anticipated, let's turn the conversation to preferred shares. And we can chalk last year up to as a real disappointment in the preferred share market for an asset class that normally buffers volatility and delivers stable yield. Can you talk about the outlook at this point in time, and is there hope for a recovery in that preferred share market?
Sure. So we did a call about this, I guess, about a month ago on preferred shares, and one of the interesting things we've seen, despite it being an incredibly volatile market, we have seen some positive signs start to come through. So you had a big rally into the end of last year after tax loss selling, but left it still, unfortunately, down substantially for the year. As this year started, the interest rates in Canada went down sharply, and of course, markets in general were volatile, and the preferred share market retested its lows. Since then, we've had a pretty strong bounce back based on three things. Interest rates in Canada have gone up a little bit. They're still incredibly low, but you have to remember that in early January, we thought the Bank of Canada was going to cut rates potentially to zero. That's now off the table, so interest rates in Canada aren't as much of a worry. You've seen credit spreads, as I mentioned earlier, behave a lot better, or corporate bonds. And probably most importantly, we've seen new issues trade very well. So last year, whenever a new issue came to market, all the existing preferreds would sell off because the new issues came at very attractive terms and investors sold existing issues to buy the new ones. What we've seen for the last month or two is that the banks have come with a lot of issues at a 5.5% yield, been priced very attractively, but you've seen new money coming into the market. So when a new bank issue has come, it hasn't caused the whole market to sell off, which tells me that the people who are in the market are in there. They're not necessarily selling to buy new issues, but you're seeing fresh money come in to buy the new issues. They perform well in the secondary market, even despite more supply coming on. So we think that's a positive sign. So to go further, we need to see interest rates in Canada head higher from here, and we need to see credit spreads remain well-behaved. That's the best prospect for more recovery in the preferred shares.
Thank you. And perhaps as we look to wrap up the call, could you identify a couple of opportunities that we see in the market and maybe just give a very high-level summary of the call as we wrap up?
Sure. So I mentioned earlier that high-yield bonds is something we think is attractive here given the what's going on in the energy market and the opportunity that presents. One of the things we've always focused on is dividends and dividend growth. So there's a chart on page 15 that shows dividend stock performance in Canada based by different quintiles of the market. And a lot of you have seen this chart before. We've had it in a few publications. We actually got it updated for year-end 2015, and the numbers have become even more staggering. So if you look at the middle line, that's the equal-weighted TSX, and that's compounded since 1986, so a year before the crash, at 5.4% annualized total return. So that's reinvested dividends. If you look at the bottom two lines, those are companies that either cut dividends or don't pay a dividend. As of the data a couple of years ago, these were small positive numbers, 1 to 1.5%. Now, because of what's happened primarily in the commodity sector, these are compounded at negative rates since 1986. So you've net lost money on stocks that either cut a dividend or don't pay a dividend going back to 1986, which I think is quite staggering. Much more interesting to us, as you could imagine, are the two top lines. The thin line is companies that simply pay a dividend. Those have compounded at 9.2% going back to 1986. And the companies that grow their dividends have compounded at over 11%. So we tend to focus on those top two lines, obviously. Typically, the dividend growers that have strong growth are going to have a much lower yield in the 1% to 2% range, but good growth of, say, 10% plus, whereas the dividend payers are going to have higher yields in the maybe 4% to 5% range, but no growth. So the way we look at it, most people can't live off of 1% yield, but they need the growth because the risk with a dividend payer with no growth is that you're much more susceptible to changes in interest rates. And, of course, we haven't seen higher interest rates in a long time, but that risk is always out there.
Terrific. Well, Robin, thanks very much for your time today, and a sincere thanks to all the clients for dialing in. We hope that you found this useful. If you would like to re-listen to the conference call, an audio replay will be available on our website shortly. As well, you'll be able to access the slide presentation. And with that, we wish you a good evening and look forward to fielding your calls at your convenience.